believe that this is our moment. Ain't no better time to be great than today. Believe in each other. Play together. Play fast. And let's go dominate a game, baby. Let's go playmakers on three. One, two, three.
It's Tuesday, July 7th. Pat Mahomes has signed the richest NFL contract of all time. Players want to skip the preseason entirely, and we'll tell you why sneeze guards on helmets is a bad idea. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarty. Hope everyone had a fantastic 4th of July as we get closer to football. I think, Gabe, my confidence meter has gone way down, but my confidence meter in the Chiefs is way high as they signed Pat Mahomes, the richest contract of all time. Conflicting reports of what the actual deal may or may not be, but we know he has 2 years left on his rookie contract. They tacked on 10 more years at approximately $500 million. $500 million. I can't even say that. I can't even get it out of my mouth. It's so much money. The exact structure of the deal, we don't quite know. There's conflicting reports on what it is. Schefter reported $140 million in injury guarantees, which is actually kind of very low because it really makes it a four-year deal for $140. Then Ian Rapoport tweeted out that he has $477 million in guarantee mechanisms, which is basically like a roster bonus of sorts, right? If he's on the team March 5th, let's say, of 2021, then 2022 is fully guaranteed. Obviously, that's going to be down the line, but that's the best example to show you about what I mean. It's a monster deal. He deserves it. Gabe probably will disagree, but go ahead, buddy.
No, I don't disagree. And I guess all I want to bring up is that I hate days like today on Twitter because we should be celebrating that our favorite player in the NFL on the defending champs got the biggest contract in sports history. It should be an exciting, fun time to talk about how great of a football player he is and the Chiefs dynasty potential, et cetera, et cetera. And instead, everyone I follow turns into an NFL insider, an agent, a salary cap expert, a friggin' fortune teller. Everyone thinks they know best what that Pat Mahomes should do. And the take that drives me crazy, and I see a lot of it, is, oh man, bad deal for him. He signed a long-term deal. He's costing himself money. Oh man, why'd he do such a thing? Okay, that's pretty easy for you guys to say when you're gambling his money. He just locked up $100 million plus guaranteed dollars. He was going to make like two or three next year. He got $100 million plus. This will change his family forever. So what if maybe in 2030 he could have made a little bit more? He's set to make $500 million. How could this possibly be presented as a bad thing? I hate it when people say that somebody changing their life is a bad thing.
Well, I think initially there was thought that, and this is the thing with how Twitter works, right? Is we kind of, the stories leak out, right? So first it was he signed a 10-year deal. Then it was, well, actually, it's more of a 12-year deal because you tack on the two that he already has. Well, then is he getting a percent of the salary cap, which we'll discuss in a second. That's actually a really interesting way to set up a contract. And then it was like, well, he really only got, you know, a 10-year deal for $450 million, which...
Oh, only.
Which look... In theory, though, if that was true, and it might still be, in year like 6 or 7, that's probably going to be cheap for a quarterback. But nonetheless, it's what it is. And then now we have the final deal, supposedly 10-year deal, $503 million. And I am so happy when players sign because this game is absolutely brutal. I know best. I've been hurt so many times in the NFL, and every player should strive for as much money as they can get. They should never take a hometown discount. And in this case, obviously, it appears that Pat did not take a hometown discount. I mean, maybe in year 9, he has a hometown discount, but right now, it's not. And he should. He should get all the money in the world because he is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. So I'm so happy for Pat. I'm happy the Chiefs have locked up their guy. It makes me really like giddy inside seeing players have this much money. And no, I do not get jealous. Only thing I do get jealous about, Gabe, with these deals is that I want private jet wealth. Like I can just fly in a private plane. This is private jet wealth. Like Pat will never fly commercial again. And that's what I'm jealous about. I'm jealous about that. That's it. That's it. Otherwise, I'm so happy he got his deal.
I feel like you're responding to some Twitter mentions when you're bringing up jealousy. I don't know that anyone's worried about you being jealous. You've got that lovely pool complete in your backyard. You've got a good life, Jeff. Well, okay, so let me ask you this. Is it possible let's just say that the people who are pouring water on this and saying it wasn't a great deal for Pat, he's silly, he could have made more in years eight through whatever of this deal. I'm going to kind of disregard them and say, can it just be that he's playing on the team he wants to play for, with the guys he wants to play with, that he has the chance to build a dynasty like we've never seen before, that he realizes, because firsthand, that even this season almost didn't happen for him. He was injured, he missed games, then he played hurt. Okay, they have this magical run, and here he is, not sure if the next season will even happen. Okay,
yeah.
Couldn't it just be that he said, hey man, bird in the hand, better than two in the bush, and this bird happens to be worth $100+ million in guaranteed money and $500 million in a decade?
So I'm with you here. I actually thought as we got closer to the season, and the season that we might not have, and we'll discuss that in a little bit, that it made sense for Pat to do this deal now instead of waiting, because you know the salary cap essentially might go down next year. I think there's going to be some finessing of the salary cap to get it back to where it could be. I don't think we're going to see 9% growth this year. I think we're going to see them borrowing from the future to pay for this for next year, basically, and the year after that. I think after that, it'll be fine. New TV money will come in, and hopefully, you know, in a couple of years, the pandemic is over, and we've gone back to life, and everything is back to the way it was. So I do think that it was smart for him to sign now. And that's why the percent of the cap deal, which is what people said, was very interesting to me, because you know right now I think he'll get like almost 20% of the cap, basically, almost. I mean, he's getting a lot of money of that cap, and that's about the top of the market. I think if you look at quarterbacks, I think Rodgers is in like the 18% range. But if you did it on cap numbers, then he could just make exponentially a lot of money, right? I mean, in year 5, 6, 7, he could be making $60 million a year, $65 million a year. But the risk was the next couple of years he wasn't. The next couple of years he could have gone down with the cap. So I like the way they did it this way. It provides just, to your point about security, for a player, and really, if a quarterback's a little different because you really don't change teams, right? If you're good, you just stay on the team forever. But there is a peace of mind knowing you're locked up for now, at least probably 6 more years. Like, he knows he's got 2 years on his rookie deal left, plus those 4 injury guaranteed years. Like, he knows for 6 years now, I have a home, I have a city, I can settle down. I'm sure he has a house. I can get married, I can have kids. Like, he knows where he's going to be. And that is such a peace of mind for players. It makes them play faster and quicker with more ease, knowing that you are set up for life, right? I mean, I remember when I signed my deal with the Giants, like, it was great. I was set up for life. And I earned that contract. It took me 6 years to get it. Pat has earned this deal as well. The one question I have is, if you're a Chiefs fan, Gabe, how many Super Bowls can you expect to win more? How many more between now, 2020 season, and let's just say it plays out to 2031. How many Super Bowls is realistic, do you think?
Well, I mean, you know me, I'm the guy who's always scared of the Patriots. I can't, you know, go to sleep without having nightmares of them. So you got to figure the Patriots or the Ravens or some team that hasn't sort of built itself up yet, like the Broncos or whoever might be the team in a few years, will steal a few. But I have to imagine they think 2 are available to them in the next decade, which would mean he'd get 3 rings in the span of about 10 years, which by NFL standards is insane. Let's not compare him to this in totally lucky, freakish run that Tom Brady's been on, which lasted almost 20 years. If he can get 3 rings for Kansas City in a decade, that's got to be considered peak Hall of Fame status.
I think 2 is the number, in my opinion. 2 is a number where you'd feel really good. So that means they've won 3 in Kansas City, right, including last season. But if you look at the NFL in the last 20 years, let's throw Tom Brady out, because that's just not realistic, in my opinion. You have the best coach, and Andy Reid's a fabulous coach. You have a great system, obviously. You have the defense that he had, all that stuff. They had 2 separate dynasties. They had the first dynasty, they won 3 and 4. Then they lost the Giants in 7, lost the Giants in 11, and then won 3 of 5, I think, to end his time, Tom Brady's time. That, in my opinion, is never going to happen again. We're not going to have a 20-year run in the NFL where you go to 9 Super Bowls, okay? So I think realistically, you're looking at 2 more wins and probably go to 3 or 4 of them. If you look at you know, in this era, you know, Peyton Manning went to 4. Big Ben's been to 3, I believe. I think he lost one, right, to the Packers. He lost one to the Packers, I believe. So he's been to 3. That's it, right? Like, that's Eli went to 2 and won 2. Like, you don't get to Super Bowl. It's hard to do that. It's so hard. The injuries in this league, the attrition, and Pat is going to outlive outlive in football terms. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, my brother, Eric Fisher, Frank Clark, maybe not Chris Jones, but Tyrann Mathieu. Like, he's going to outplay these guys. So they're going to have to find replacements for these players as they retire, get cut, move on. And so the Chiefs front office now is going to have to go to work. They're going to have to draft really, really well, and they're going to have to pick up free agents in spots where they need to add to the roster. And so you're going to start seeing, this is a big year. This is the year where they kind of have to win it. Like, they're going for it this year, right? And then I think after this year, we're going to start seeing a couple changes on their roster because they just can't pay everybody. You really can't pay all the guys they're paying. So I think Chiefs fans, two Super Bowls is very realistic to win between now and 2031. Three or four appearances is probably about right. And also, too, to end this discussion, Andy Reid has got to be coaching him for the next 10 years, which I don't know if Andy's going to coach for that long. He said he wants to coach Pat's entire career, but that's a lot of years left.
Yeah, but this also sets itself up well for Eric Bieniemy taking over and just sort of like it being the Mahomes-Bieniemy team, right? I mean, once they've got a dynasty in place and they figured out who the guys who are irreplaceable are and who are the moving parts, you know, the Brady-Pats figured out who had to be around, and it was a few guys on the line and a few key guys on defense. They had to, you know, have some continuity, but the other guys were all interchangeable, even some of the stars. So once they get it figured out, maybe Andy can move off. I was going to ask you about that. How restrictive is this money? If we're talking between 15 and 20% of their overall cap as we see it right now, does it make it hard for them to get the types of pieces they need? You know, remember, the beauty of this team was the quarterback was the best player in the league and he was relatively cheap. We always compared it to the Warriors with Steph Curry. He was the best player in the league and he was pretty cheap. Does this blow that up?
Well, I mean, we'll find out this year because I don't know what the cap number will be this year, but we have not seen quarterbacks with huge cap numbers win Super Bowls. We just haven't. I mean, I don't know when the last time it was. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't have a huge cap number. It wasn't Carson Wentz and Nick Foles. It wasn't Pat Mahomes last year, right? I mean, like, it just, that has not been the case. And so, but the Chiefs, they have guys under contract right now, which is hugely important. They don't have Chris Jones under contract. Well, they franchised him. And so that's why my point about kind of making it work this year is important because, you know, Tyreek Hill is going to want money. Kelce wanted more money. Guys are going to start wanting money, a lot of money. And it's just not going to be there. And so, again, they have to do really well drafting. The thing about, you mentioned the Patriots in interchangeable parts. That's just how their defense was. Like, the defense with Spags is not like interchangeable. Like, you can't just kind of like swap out Frank Clark for someone who's not as good as Frank Clark. It needs to have a pass rusher like Frank Clark. The Patriots were able to get by because they have a genius running their defense and they're able to kind of move these interchangeable parts back and forth. So the Chiefs, I don't think, have that capability to be so interchangeable.
All right. Well, this is why you explain how things work here, and I just sort of say conventional wisdom. Thank you for correcting me. I want to throw this joke at you, but it's kind of not totally a joke. This is from our buddy, Cousin Sal. He said, Jerry Jones currently moving at a furious pace to cut Dak Prescott's internet and phone service. This has no bearing on Dak Prescott, right? I mean, come on.
Well,
he can't possibly think this relates to him.
His agent's going to try to do it that way. Like, his agent's
but nobody thinks they're in the same category, and nobody thinks their money should be comparable.
No, I agree, but we know that what you get paid is typically based off what the last guy got paid at your position. And this obviously will be something his agents will fight for. He's not gonna get $45 million, but it might have upped his price to like 37.5 range, which Dallas is kind of stuck. They kind of have to pay it, but they shouldn't.
Well, God bless. I mean, get your money, Dak, but this should not have any bearing on what he's worth. And I would just say one more point, and maybe I'm getting hung up on this, but I just really, everyone, just chill, man. Like, you're the drunk guy leaning over the blackjack table right now, telling the guy to split tens. Like, no, man, take a winning hand, be happy, go to the buffet, enjoy your night, Pat. Like, all these other people say, oh man, year 2027, you could have made twice as much. Look at the way the cap works. Like, we can't even predict football will happen this year. Like, just get paid.
Yeah, our great producer, Zuri, drops this nugget here. Over the last 10 years, the teams whose quarterbacks have had the highest salary cap number have missed the playoffs 8 times.
Well, because it makes it really hard to get the rest of the other 52 guys paid the right way and put a roster
and
together.
Injuries and attrition. I mean, it's all part of this. Look, and the Ravens are really good still. Like the Ravens, and we'll get to them in a little bit. But they're really good, man. So, you know, this will be a fun conference to watch for years to come.
Yeah, well, let's hope we get to watch. That gets us to the next topic. What we thought was kind of going to be the first thing we discussed today until this deal came together right before the show started. So, no other way to say it. NFL players are starting to push back hard on playing this season without some big plans put in place. The NFL's been pretty quiet with details the last few weeks. We know they want to get the season going, but they haven't really shared with the teams exactly what that means. So now players, through their union, have proposed a few things. Canceling all four preseason games. They want to come back to camp in a few weeks, but not have 11v11 drills, have 20 or fewer players in the facility at one time, like basically come up with a lot more safety protocols and practice a lot less. Basically, let's focus on the games and nothing else is what the players seem to be saying. Coaches, meanwhile, today are meeting to talk about, well, how the hell are we going to make that work to be safe, but also to be fair so we all follow the same rules. I don't want to call it a mess, but it's starting to feel like they're only getting to the hard part now. And this was stuff I wish they'd figured out a few weeks ago. Where's your head on this?
Well, I think they had an idea of what they wanted to do. And then coronavirus cases spiked across the country and things changed very quickly, which is kind of where we are right now. My thought on this is a couple things. One is that it does appear they want to play, right? Both sides want to play. I think the coaches want to play and the players want to play. They want to do it the safest way possible. And we're seeing that. In other sports, guys just aren't playing, right? We're seeing in baseball, guys are not playing. And in basketball, guys have opted out. I do not think we'll see a lot of NFL players opt out, no matter what ends up being the protocols for this season. I do think a player like Freddie Freeman, who the Braves first baseman, who's been healthy in his entire life, his entire career, has COVID. He's symptomatic. Like, he has issues right now. So I wonder if that's giving players pause on why they want to put in more protocols for the season. So there's a lot to break down here, but I'll just say off the top, it does feel like the players are trying to use this to not play the preseason a little bit. I hate saying that, but the three questions I have when it comes to all the protocols they want in place, specifically the practice stuff, not like not the temperature checks, not the protocols, like if you test positive, what happens, which they've kind of leaked out, or negative or asymptomatic. That doesn't seem to be any of the issues. Like, the players don't seem to have concerns about how they're testing, what that process is going to be, how that works. They're worried about just being in contact with each other more often than not. So a couple of things here. One is that, do they want the preseason, which they really want, to have a ramp-up period for 3 weeks, then basically a two-week period of practice with no pads, and then 8 padded practices before week one with no preseason, obviously, no preseason games. So a couple of things that I wonder here. One is that, is this an issue of just COVID? I don't want to get sick. The less contact I have with people on my team, the other teams, the less chance I have to get sick. Is it two that I don't think I'm going to be physically in shape to play. We need to have a long ramp-up period to get me physically in shape to play. Or three, you know, we're going to use the leverage to not play the preseason, which I think it's a combo of all those. I think it's more two and three. I think guys are worried about being in shape to play. But I'll say this, 2011 game in the lockout, we had a full preseason. And I worry that they're scaling back too much that'll actually lead to injuries. So football, for a lot of positions, you actually have to hit each other in practice. Offense, defensive line, linebacker, tight end, maybe safety, wide receivers and corners, go ahead. You don't have to hit each other. But you do have to feel like some sort of contact in practice, because that gets your body used to being hit at weird angles. It gets your body used to the stress of being pounded on. It gets your body used to the action you're going to see on Sunday. And the less time you have doing that, the more susceptible, in my opinion, you are to getting injured on game day. And I know a lot of starters don't play in the preseason anymore, but they play a little bit, right? Just something to get used to moving full speed again. Joe Thomas once said, the longtime Browns left tackle who will be a future Hall of Famer, he needed only 10 practices to get ready. Well, they only have 8 padded practices now. So even for a guy like Joe Thomas, this will not be enough to get a Hall of Famer ready to play.
Yeah.
So, like, I just think it's not enough practices to get players ready to go. I'm really worried we're going to have a ton more injuries because players want this extended ramp-up period.
Yeah, and like you said, let's assume that it's more about preferring not to practice than just being genuinely scared of getting COVID. If that's their fear, then they're perfectly welcome to that fear, and we should all honor it. But it does seem a little bit foolish to avoid practice, and I'm going to throw this at you, because you often speak up for the guys sort of in the bottom third of the roster. It also seems a little bit selfish by the bigger name guys who know their spot is safe. Doesn't it? I mean, when you watch Hard Knocks, it always seems like, man, that 53rd spot is going to be decided in week 3 and 4 of the preseason.
It does. Your
performance in those games matters for the guys who aren't making $10 million a year. So is it unfair to them if they miss that chance?
Well, it definitely is unfair to them. It really is. I've talked a lot about roster construction on this podcast because I think we overvalue competition in that word and the way we talk about rosters. But you're absolutely right. The final couple games of the preseason are very important to the back-end roster guys. It's only important to about 10 guys. Not all 37 of them. It's just 10. And maybe it's 6 in week 4. But those are important reps that you're not going to have now. This is going to hamper rookies preparing for the season. Imagine if you're a rookie and you get 8 padded practices as an offensive lineman, and then you have to go play week 1 against, J.J. Watt or Von Miller, or you're going to get toasted. You're going to get destroyed. So I understand what the players are trying to do, but look, if you, the testing is not where I thought it would be by now. I thought testing would be like, you get tested, you get result back, and you move on. It's clearly not to baseball players. Yesterday, we're talking about how they just can't even get their test results back. Baseball had to cancel some workouts because they didn't have results back after 3 days. I think even someone said up to a week, they didn't get results back. I thought we'd have results back like now, but let's say in the next couple of weeks, we get some technology that allows us to do that much quicker. If you test everybody in the facility and they test negative as they walk in the door, then why can't you just practice? Like, why can't you continue doing what you normally do if you assume everyone is just healthy? Now, I know it doesn't manifest for a couple of days, so there might be a concern there. I know that, some tests are faulty. But, in theory, if people are in the facility, they are deemed to be healthy. And you should be able to practice, I think, pretty much normally if everyone is healthy.
We're getting into the real hypotheticals here, but I know this came up. There was a players conversation about all the various rules they want and what the sort of unintended consequences might be. And if I have this right, Philip Rivers, who's, still in the league somehow, he raised a question on this NFLPA call last week. And it was basically this: if a player tests positive for COVID-19 during Super Bowl week, one game left to go, but that player is asymptomatic, so they aren't putting their body in any huge risk by playing, would they still have no choice but to sit based on the rules that they want in place for the whole rest of the season? They want to seclude guys and make sure everyone stays healthy and not let it be a huge breakout. But if it gets down to the Super Bowl and the quarterback gets it but feels fine, can he just say screw it and they go for it? We would let a guy play with a lot of injuries if it came down to the Super Bowl.
We've talked about this. What if someone tested positive Saturday and the team just withheld it? Like Pat Mahomes, test positive. They just withheld it from Pat and told him Monday. Obviously, they'd be open for liability if anyone found out. But the player would have to sit. That's what the season is. Look, for football to be back on the NFL side, Gabe, we have to get used to being basically uncomfortable with the way things are going to happen. If you're a player, you have to be uncomfortable. It's just not going to be, your routine is going to be off. We are very routine-based individuals, right? We wake up at the same time. We show up at the same time. I showed up between 6:35 and 6:40 in the morning. I went to the bathroom. I got breakfast. I got my treatment. I got a meeting. Very regimented schedule, right? We're going to have to be very flexible with when we show up, probably, when we work out, how we do meetings, how we travel, how we shower, how we take a poop. All those things are going to have to be very regimented, be different than our normal regiment. And coaches, the same way. GMs, front office, it's all going to be different this year. And we have to get comfortable with that idea that it is going to be different. And I hope that they understand. I feel like they don't quite, the players at least, don't really understand that it is going to be very, very different. I hope they do. I think some do. I'm not sure they really grasp the concessions they're going to have to make this work.
I'm not getting the feeling that that many guys get it. Some do, obviously, but too many guys are testing positive and too many guys are doing things that are deemed risky for me to think that they get what's going to have to change. And you said it. Others have said it. I noticed it over the weekend on Twitter. You know, look, we all want football back, but we're going to have to be realistic. Football only gets to come back if the country is in a better place, which means everyone has to step up and do a little bit better job. You know, like, that's just a reality. That's not a political stance. That's just the fact that if you want the thing you love, and we all want it, we just got to be a little bit better at this, period. Players, fans, everybody.
Sean Doolittle, the Washington Nationals, is he a pitcher? I think he's a pitcher. Mm-hmm. He said that...
Or a doctor. I'm not sure.
He said that sports are a reward for basically a functioning society. And
right.
that... You know, he doesn't believe we're functioning at a high level. We're not. We're absolutely not. So he's absolutely correct. And something that I've said for a while now, too, is that sports do feel like they would be a reward for functioning properly. And we're not there right now. And so we're gonna battle through it, though. I mean, we're going to find a way to play, I think, in the NFL and just get through it. I mean, look, I think a suggestion, like, go to Canada. I mean, Canada is looking pretty good right now. I mean, why don't they just move – up, they have football stadiums, just repaint them for the NFL. Is that a bad idea?
Well, I mean, I think there's some people who'd like to move to Canada for other reasons. But no, I mean, it's not a bad idea if Canada will let us in. I'm not so sure they want to take that problem on. They got things under control up there. But
they're letting hockey there. Hockey's going to do their little bubble up there.
Yeah. Well, they like hockey a lot more than they like football. I think it might be worth the risk for them with hockey. Would we let a bunch of hockey teams down into America and putting us at risk? I don't think so.
I mean, there are states that are like, we're open. Come for, who cares? Positive test, schmozive test, whatever. Come play. Come do what you want to do. And that leads me, by the way, right into college football because, oh boy. Ooh, the old Jeff Schwartz positivity meter is not very high on this one.
No, and unfortunately, if we're starting to go dark and doomsday, I think it's about to get worse. So you mentioned college football. Yeah, so that's sort of a state-by-state thing, right? And a lot of the schools are tied to their state government. So I'm going to just spell it out. I think it's great that college football is really trying hard to preserve a season that is looking more and more doubtful. They're coming up with some creative ways. The Ivy League is considering playing its football season in the spring. I know you have thoughts on that. And then a lot of teams, I think 60-plus D1 teams, big programs, the ones we watch every Saturday, not the Ivy League, they're going to install this thing by Schutt called the Splash Shield, which is basically a face mask around your mouth where normally you just have the bars. So it's basically plexiglass where your mouth is to keep the COVID droplets from spreading around. And this is the new big idea for how to keep players a little bit safer and healthier. So no bad ideas in a brainstorm. Got to give it a shot, but I have a feeling you have doubts about this helping anything.
Well, the reason why you have to wear the splash guard, let's say the spit guard, is because there's going to be no uniformity in college football this year. There's going to be – every conference will have their own testing protocols. They'll have their own way to deal with this. They'll have their own way to report it. They'll have their own way to travel. And the NCAA has bowed out. They're letting everyone figure this out on their own. Every state will have different regulations. Some will have fans. Some will not. It's going to be an absolute shit show. And I do think that they're going to play. Some teams will play. I don't know how many will play. I don't know if all of them will play. I don't know what time they're going to play. But some will play. I don't know how disjointed it's going to be. I have a feeling that Power 5 schools will make it work. We had the commissioner of the Pac-12 conference on my Pac-12 show, Pac-12 Today. And he said that 85% of their budget is based off football. Like, there's a financial reason to try to make this work. And they have to find every way possible to do that. So some solutions are the face shield, which is stupid. But moving the season to, you know, October, which I saw Power 5 athletic director mentioned today, like, hey, man, you know, maybe October is the way to go. But Gabe, is it going to be better in October?
I don't see any reason to believe it will.
Probably not. Just conference schedules, which is, you know, which is basically October. And then the spring football idea, which is really, really silly for Power 5 conference schools to do. First of all, let's just simple fact. Like, let's go weather. Okay, weather is in a February going to play outdoors in most of the country is going to be an utter disaster. It doesn't benefit the players or the coaches or the staff or anybody at the game watching the game to play a February game in most of these college cities. Seems utterly ridiculous. The NFL draft, the NFL mentioned they're not moving the draft, guys. Like, their season's going on. They're not changing the draft. So the draft will be in the middle of the college football season. Guys will be getting drafted while they're playing football. Most guys won't be playing football. They're in the top three rounds. They'll sit out. They'll sit out, prepare for the combine. They'll do all that. They'll go to the NFL in April, and you'll miss all your college stars from your favorite team. But the number one reason why spring football is just a silly idea is the idea that you can play two seasons in one calendar year. That's just ridiculous. By calendar year, I mean like January 1st to January 1st, right? Not like within a year. So you have a season February. Let's say the minimum game, it's a conference schedule, 9 games, right? So basically three months, okay? February, March, April. So that leaves May, June, July to get ready to go back to camp in August for a fall of 2020 season. I mean, that's like at the minimum requirement you could possibly have to get everyone's body back and ready to play. But there's a reason why, you know, the NFL's off for 7 months almost, right? I mean, OTAs are not very much. College football has spring football practice. It's like, it's not, you know, they don't really hit no more in spring practice. You know, it'd be very hard to get your body back and ready for a season. What if someone gets hurt in the spring football season? They could be out for the next season, which is silly, right? It sucks for them. Right now, if a guy gets hurt in September, they're probably back the following September. But if a guy gets hurt in February, it's probably not playing in September if it's a bad injury. So there's many reasons why this. I just don't think it's going to happen this way. Maybe the Ivy Leagues do it. The Ivy Leagues have no bearing whatsoever on what Power 5 conference do. You know, you're a fan of USC. USC has said they're going to have basically online classes only. How comfortable do you feel if the campus is essentially closed, but the USC athletes are allowed to go practice and get ready to play?
I don't know about my comfort level, but I've seen some players voice the opinion that I tend to agree with, which is, hold on a second. All the other students aren't coming back to campus, but we're supposed to still be here playing football for free? Uh-uh. And I think that the players who've raised that sort of question, or maybe just stated that opinion that they don't want to do that, have every right to say that. And it's just going to further this topic of when are these guys going to get paid? Because then they'd be turning down money and you'd say, well, that's sort of a grown-up choice. Like, they have that right. But being asked to be on campus to entertain us with football when the whole rest of the population of students are not there because it's deemed unsafe, that seems wild to me. I do see why players are fighting that.
It is. But you know how schools are going to get around this, right? They're going to just be like, okay, well, you know, we have some labs open, the library's open, student services center's open, you know, like the quad's open, but, you know, but mostly online classes, but, you know, football players can still come anyways. Look, the question becomes, Gabe, is that if you signed a scholarship, it's basically a contract, right? And I know you're not getting paid. I'm very much on the side of name, image, and likeness. I'm not so much on the side of just straight salary for the players. You signed a contract to play. And if your school tells you you're playing, then you're playing. I mean, I think it's kind of gross to make the kids play through this, even though I think most of them would say, F it, I'll play. I don't care. I'm 18 years old. Why do I care about coronavirus? It hasn't really affected me. And, you know, and if I don't have an autoimmune issue or I don't have a pre-existing condition, it's not going to affect me. Whatever. I think a lot of kids feel that way. But how much do we look at the adults in the room to make sure that they're safe? So again, there's so much money involved, Gabe, that like it just, like, college sports would almost never recover if they missed an entire football season. I mean, like, you would lose all Olympic sports. You'd have to cut a bunch of staff. It'd be so tough to continue athletic departments without football.
Yeah, I mean, the unintended consequences of canceling a football season, particularly at schools, you mentioned USC, like USC, that could impact our Olympic team for years to come. I mean, that impacts baseball, which is a great program, and women's sports, and the whole local economy. I mean, all of that stuff is a byproduct of what happens to the football program at USC, and I imagine that's the case at most Power 5 schools. So, yeah, I mean, they got to be careful with this one, but I also think, you said it, adults have to make adult decisions, and nobody is going to love the outcomes in any of these scenarios. All right, well, you said this very quickly, and we can move on, but I just want to make sure I understand. Why is the mask face shield thing such a stupid idea to you? Why are you just dismissing that one immediately?
I think it's going to fog up very easily. Now, Nicole Auerbach, who wrote the article, said that, and I should have done a better job of looking at the article, said that a semi-pro team wore these and didn't have fogging up issues.
Okay.
Like, I'm a mouth breather. Like, I would fog that. I think it would just fog up in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, I just know pushing my stroller around with my kids when I get the mask and the sunglasses on, we got foggy glasses. But if you've ever been skiing or snowboarding, you know, hock a little spit into the thing, rub it around. Doesn't that work? Sort of like scuba goggles. Can't you just, you know, defog it that way with a little spit?
Yeah, you could put on like, you know, when I used to go swimming, I put a little like baby shampoo on the goggles and would keep them, you know, from fogging up and, you know, getting in my eyes. So, yeah, I could see that being the case. I just think that, look, I do agree that we should try everything possible to play. But I'm not sure how much that's really gonna do anything.
So
you know David Chow, right? Pro Football Doc. He was on a radio show I did last week, and he said, like, look, it takes about 15 minutes in like a room that has COVID floating around to like get in your body, right? And he's like, look, playing football, you're really not gonna spend 15 minutes like on top of somebody breathing in their face all the time. That's why the indoor activities are being banned, like bars. You know, we've seen, unfortunately, people have parties and whatnot and movie theaters and eating inside. So I hope that being outside would eliminate the need to wear these face shields.
Yeah, I hope. I guess, like I said at the top, like, no bad idea in a brainstorm. I think we should just be open to the possibilities. And if it means getting football back and the kids or the young guys who are playing feeling comfortable, I'm all for it. So until somebody comes up with an idea that makes people unsafe, I say give it a try. Should we move the line to our little betting segment?
Let's do it, buddy.
All right, these are some over-unders I set for you to bet on. Just a few more topics to hit. So, I want to know Lamar Jackson's place in MVP voting this year, over under 2.5. Will he be in the top three or not?
I would say the juice on the, if there's an actual bet and there was juice on it, that would really move my answer here. I would just would say that probably no.
Okay.
Pat Mahomes will be one or two. And then I think, you know, you have a surprise. We've seen surprise MVPs the last couple of years. I mean, Mahomes kind of came out of nowhere. Lamar came out of nowhere. I mean, maybe it's Carson Wentz. Maybe
Josh Allen.
Maybe it's Carson Wentz. Maybe it's your boy Tomas Brady in Tampa. Uh-huh. Maybe it's Dak Prescott. I mean, it feels like there's, you know, guys out of nowhere come up and get this award. I would bet no on this.
Okay, but that's really, you're just sort of playing the odds of the field is very big.
Lamar's gonna have he's gonna have a really good season.
Okay, because that's what I really wanted to get into was your boy Bill Barnwell. Really dug deep into Lamar's season last year, and everyone acknowledges that was, you know, unreal, and we can't expect that from him every year. But he has sort of, through his own stats, debunked the notion that the league has figured Lamar out, or that he was so bad when they were behind. You know, something you talked about and convinced me of was that, yeah, this whole, you know, Lamar offense works great when you're leading. What happens when you're behind? He isn't great in that situation. Well, the stats say he's at least average. He's a little better than average when he's behind. And there's plenty of Hall of Famers who have sucked in those situations. But he's still doing just fine. So the smart guys like Barnwell have crunched the numbers and said, don't expect some regression to the mean. This guy could keep it around that level because the league hasn't caught up.
Lamar was not behind in many games last year, and the couple he were was like the Chiefs game where he was down big and then threw up like two arm punts that were caught, essentially. And then in the playoff game, he was behind a bunch. Yeah, he threw for a ton of yards, but they didn't score. Like, I mean, I get that his passer rating might be good, but the offense doesn't function as well when they're behind. I do wonder how much they work into the offense, just kind of some more passing concepts, just to kind of be ready in those situations. I'm very curious to see if there's a kind of a new look offense. I think Lamar will have a great season still. I do think this offense is hard to figure out and will not be figured out. And they are a real contender to win the AFC.
Well, let me ask you this then, because we talked about this several weeks ago, but it feels more relevant now. My theory back then was that teams that are built just around, you know, athleticism and having similar personnel this year as to last year, if we don't have a preseason, right? If we don't have the chance for everyone to sort of get up to speed, does a guy who can just do it all by himself get even better? I mean, I hate to be so simplistic about it, but if what Lamar does is not that complicated, he's just faster than everyone. And now everyone's out of shape or hurt.
Oh,
isn't he going to get even better?
Agreed. Yes. I think veteran teams this year with high functioning offenses are going to come out of the gate and just crush teams.
All right. So let's bet the Ravens over.
And I want to be clear here. It's not like easy what he does. He's an accurate passer in the play action pass game. I mean, there's many things he does very well that make the offense go. It's not just easy. I want to make that clear.
Yeah, no, I think you've been clear. You've been fair about that. I mean, your criticism of him has always been qualified in that he's terrific and good at a lot of things, but what he does won't work through 17 weeks and 3 or 4 weeks of postseason. I'm clear on that. I just like bringing him up because, you know, you kind of ate it a little bit last season.
I did. That's correct.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about another guy who usually triggers you. It's Baker Mayfield. I want to know his QBR this season. Among other third-year quarterbacks, will he be ahead or behind 0.5? Is he going to rank number one or somewhere down the list? And by the way, Lamar's in that group. So we're going to say Lamar's ahead of him. Then does Baker come in next?
I think he does. I think he's going to have a big bounce-back season. I'll tell you why. Yeah, Kevin Stefanski is a play caller who's now his coach, obviously. He incorporates the play-action pass game a lot. And those are just easy completions. Those are easy completions. And he has the talent to make those completions go very far. And I think that the offense will be designed a lot more around making sure Baker has high quality pass attempts and not just forced, right? They've upgraded their offensive line. They've upgraded their defense. They upgraded their play caller. They should be really good at offense this year. And also it's more of an indictment on Josh Allen, who I just has shown, I don't know, a tiny bit of improvement, but they have a really, really tough schedule this year. And I don't think Josh Allen is as good as he was last season. And that's I mean, he completed 58% of passes. He wasn't very good last year, but I don't think he's going to be any better.
Okay, so it's Lamar clearly ahead of the pack. Then Baker, you think, improves this year and is okay. Josh Allen, you're not a buyer. Sam Darnold,
I mean, I probably put Sam Darnold third then.
Sam Darnold third. And then, okay.
Josh Allen fine. Four.
Josh Allen fourth. And then there's a few other guys from that class who are seeming less and less relevant every day.
Kyle Allen, Josh Rosen, done. They're not.
Yeah, and Mason Rudolph, we're not talking about him any longer, thank God. Well, okay, so I mean, I'm going to hold you to this, that Baker Mayfield might actually have a decent season. He's got a hell of a division to compete in. I think third place is about as good as they can hope for, but maybe his numbers will start to improve. Okay, we can switch gears to something a little goofier now. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the topic, so you may not be ready for this.
Oh, I have.
Give me your best guess here. Hot dogs Jeff Schwartz could eat in a hot dog eating contest with the Nathan's Rules if he had the proper training, whatever the hell that means. I want to know, over under 24 and a half hot dogs, Jeff.
Hot dogs are disgusting.
Yeah, I agree with that. The way that they eat them. I like them on a grill, but
I mean, I don't like them ever.
Wow. What? You don't like hot dogs?
Yeah, I'm not a hot dog guy. So I would say, I mean, probably when I was younger, 24 and a half. I probably could get that with the proper training. I mean, I've always caught on very well to training and to preparing my body for events. My favorite part about the Nathan's hot dog eating contest is a couple of things. One is that this year, Mike Gold Jr. got to do the play-by-play, which is the fat guy's dream. But secondly, all the old white men on social media that are very upset that we watch hot dog eating contests. There are many old white sports writers who were very, very upset. Guess what, guys? Just don't watch. I watched 2 minutes. I watched like Mike Gold talk for 2 minutes. I was like, great job, buddy. Sent him a text and moved on. Like, I just like, I'm not spending my 4th of July watching people eat food. Like, that was fun like when I was 12. It's not fun anymore to watch. I'm a grown adult that I don't need to watch him stuff his face with hot dogs.
Hey, I'm with you. I've been out on the Nathan's hot dog eating contest since like the second year I had to prepare segments on cold pizza about it, you know, and it was Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi back then too. Like, I got
Kobayashi
over it real quick.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
I tried to watch, they did a 30 for 30 on them, and I just was like, I was so grossed out. I was like, I'm just done with this. Supposedly Joey Chestnut then goes out and drinks afterwards. Like, he doesn't even just like throw it up or nothing.
I don't even know how that's possible. I mean, yeah, and not to take it here, but you know, you brought up pooping earlier with the routines that NFL players have, and they're going to have to get used to changing their routines. I don't know how he digests that, and that makes its way through his system. I don't quite understand how that all fits in there, and then what happens when it needs to come out if he's not just barfing it all up.
He might take an enema, just psh, pop one up there and get after it. So that might be something. A quick aside here.
Please, anything to get off of this.
Schefter has tweeted out that Pat has a bunch of incentives. He gets $1.25 million for winning the AFC Championship game, $1.25 million for winning the MVP. That's $25 million of incentives to take his deal from $477 to $503. So we're starting to see more of what's – it's not – you know, a lot of this is not realized money.
So if he does everything at the level that we think he's capable of for 10 years, he could make $500 million.
Half a billion, yes.
Yeah, that seems pretty good to me. All right, let's wrap things up with another question. I don't know if you even attempted. I would like to know, days until Jeff finishes watching Hamilton on Disney Plus, over under 5.5 from today.
Well, I've watched most of it so far.
Oh, you've got a head start.
It is long.
I know, it's very long, but it's very good. So,
did you see it in New York?
No, I'm like one of the few bougie people who did not get to see it.
I saw it in Charlotte, and not with the original cast, and I couldn't understand a word they were saying. It was just long, and so I've enjoyed watching it. My kids love it. They asked to put it on every morning so far. I was doing the Peloton yesterday, and my daughter sat on the couch with her iPad watching Hamilton. She loves when the king sings. Absolutely loves it. She loves it. And he's got, have you seen the spit?
Yeah.
She loves the king. But the first time we put on for about 45 minutes with the kids, we put into bed. My wife and I watched some more and I fell asleep. Like it's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
That's how long plays are. So it's a super long movie, but it's probably a normal length Broadway show. So how far in are you now, and when will you resume? Just so I can get an answer to this question of over under.
Well, every time that my kids want to watch it, they want to start from the beginning to watch the king.
Oh, that's
so
a problem.
I'm not even sure where I left off. I would say that I do not finish. I mean, I've watched half of it. I guess I could finish it tonight. So I would still say I probably don't do it tonight, though.
I have to say, you should, that it is one of the very few things in life that has been among the most overhyped things I've ever heard about, especially living in New York when it came out. And I happen to be friendly with or used to know some guys who were like connected to it. I mean, like the guys in the show. And so it was constantly being talked about in my circle, and lots of friends went to see it. Everyone said it was phenomenal. I never got to go. It's actually maybe even better than I thought it would be, which is incredible because most things don't live up to the hype. It's honestly that good.
Did you – wait, you thought it wasn't going to be good?
I mean, I thought it would be good, but like it couldn't be as good as everyone said it was. And I actually think it might be better. I've never seen anything like it. I have no idea how they made it.
The original cast is much better than the cast I saw in Charlotte.
Whoa.
Like there's a clear, like it's really good. I have a better appreciation. Now I don't have like my mom's appreciation for it, where she like cries every time she watches it. Like that's a little much to me. She loves the songs. I mean, like I don't like it like that, but it's been good. It's been fun to watch. And my kids like it, which I'm shocked by.
Yeah. That also confuses me because there's almost nothing for a kid to understand in that. It's hard for an adult to follow it, but I can't imagine a kid understanding.
My son loves the fact, not loves, but he loves that he can talk about this. He realized that Hamilton got married and that they kissed on the lips, and it's been grossing my son out.
He's at that age where that grosses him out a little bit.
Six, almost six. Yeah.
Okay. So this is, he's going to have that feeling for a while.
Yeah, he said, like, he's like, Daddy, they got married and they kissed. So he loves that he knows, understands, like, what happened between them.
Well, wait till he gets to the part where Hamilton starts kissing some other women. He's really going to hate that part.
He also thinks it's funny that we have been there, but he just doesn't know this. It's funny. He also really is into the fact that the sisters are so very friendly. And he's like, why are the sisters so friendly with each other? They're adults now. And I'm like, bud, you and your sister can be friends forever. Like, what do you mean by so friendly? He thinks it's really weird that they're still like really good friends.
I guess that makes sense. I think he's counting down the days till he can outgrow it all and say goodbye to his big sister. I hope you finish it in less than 5.5 days. I haven't watched it over and over again like some people, but I'll probably watch it again one day. And the guys who put it together are geniuses. So anyone listening who made it to this point in the show, give it 2 hours and 45 minutes, especially because we got no sports. You'll have fun watching.
I'm just like, I thought to myself watching it, like the amount of production that went into this. It's impressive.
It's incredible. And it's like running an offense. I mean, every single piece of staging and singing, it's all connected. Like one guy screws that up and, you know, quarterback's getting sacked hard. So it's a phenomenal production. So I enjoyed it.
I love ending on the fact that Ian Rappaport had to tweet out the exact thing I said about the guarantee mechanism. So I feel very, if you've made it to this part, then you know that I'm right about what a guarantee mechanism is. So
I just assumed FYI. You were the whole time.
He said that the team guarantees Pat Mahomes' salary a year out. And if they don't pick up the guarantees, they have to cut him. That's what a roster guarantee and bonus can be. All right, guys. Well, we had a great show today because of the Chiefs. Thank you, Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, for giving us something to talk about. We had a show planned. Just had to scrap the first segment. I absolutely love the fast-paced moving of our team. I'll be back Thursday. Gabe, have a great week. We're back together on Monday. Really appreciate it. Rate, review, subscribe. Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you guys later.